Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And on today's episode, we're diving into John Hyams' Sick. Situated in the early days of the pandemic, the film follows friends Parker and Miri as they quarantine at a remote lake house owned by Parker's parents. They are joined unexpectedly by DJ, Parker's friend with benefits, who is eager to make their relationship exclusive. But their idyllic reprieve is soon interrupted when an unexpected threat starts stalking them. We're gonna spoil the hell out of this film today, so stay tuned.
Shall we talk about our general impressions first?
Yes. Oh, that's probably a good idea.
Well, I can go. I liked the film. Okay. I even went back and watched it again today.
Yes.
And it still holds up. I'm not going to say I'm in love with it, but I like it. And I found some themes that I think are definitely worthy of talking about.
Good. That's fantastic.
And there were some good moments and definitely a good music scene.
There was a good music scene.
Okay. I also liked it. As of 1 hour and 40 seconds is when I started really liking it. Before that, I thought it was very average at best. And I think it's so interesting that I'm probably going to teach it anytime I teach the slasher film from now on, because I thought it was a really interesting entry in the slasher genre. Unless, of course, Liz convinces me otherwise, but that's my plan. I mean, I can't remember how long the film was. It's probably about
an hour, 40 seconds. And
yeah, I mean, it's probably about an hour and 40 minutes. So the last 40 minutes is pretty brilliant. Yeah. The first hour, average.
Interesting. So my experience was not like either one of yours. In fact, I watched it and then I saw your reactions and I thought, okay, I'm missing something. I went back and watched it again and thought, no, indeed, you are correct. This is hot garbage. So I have been thinking like to try and come up with a little bit more of a critical analysis.
Can you be a bit more open-minded, please?
No, I cannot.
Okay.
Of all of the things we've seen together, this is hot garbage. I am so curious.
This movie has set me off in so many different aspects. It's ridiculous, but I have figured out that why I'm having a reaction to it. And I think people who don't like this film, like myself, are probably going to fall into one of two camps. Okay. And we can talk about those camps. But first, let's talk about the good stuff according to you guys. What did you really like about this?
So what hooked me originally is I watched the trailer. And so I was looking for all those moments. I mean, there's definitely a moment in the trailer where something totally funny happens. And I was thinking, yes, this is going to be a little bit of horror comedy with a slasher. And that's what I was looking for.
Okay.
It's not quite there. So the funny moment, you know, in the car with a mask, you know, this is, I'm sure we'll get to that later on.
Oh, the part where Parker runs up to the car.
Yes.
The woman's in it.
Yes. Okay. Parker's about to die and she runs up to the car.
Like, and the woman's where's
your mask?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's not safe. You have to get in the car. So I guess I'm not spoiling anything since it's in the trailer.
No.
And
you can spoil it all.
We're going to be
That's
spoiling
true.
It.
Yeah.
We sort of have to talk about it.
That's true. So I was looking for that, but moments like that were good. The kill scenes, I did love the fact that they used songs from Erasure in there. I mean,
the one saving grace of this
that
film.
Was absolutely amazing. I don't know. I wouldn't say it was high highs, but I just still felt overwhelmingly good. I guess Erasure and some of those comedy moments really made it for me.
The moment that Gwen just talked about, when the main protagonist, Parker, is, you know, she's being chased by the killer. She stumbles on the road, bleeding, and, you know, a car comes along and she screams for the woman to let her in, and the woman won't let her in until she puts the mask on. I mean, that's funny, and I was like yelling at the screen at that point. I was like, what the hell? What is wrong with you? Let her in the damn car! But it's actually the turning point for me, because I think the film gets really interesting after that. I mean, before that, it was, I didn't like either of the main characters, okay. Mary or Parker. Didn't like either of them, didn't really care for them. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit more later. But I felt like the pacing was off. You know, I was aware of the fact that there was still a lot of the movie left after the killer has sort of come in and killed one of the three people in the house. And I was like, what's going to happen for the rest of the film? And it felt boring. There was a lot of Parker running around, screaming. I was like, where's this film going? But that was the turning point when the older woman in the car enters the film and won't let Parker in the car because she doesn't wear her mask. And it was after that that the film was really made for me, because we have middle-aged slasher killers.
Yeah. Oh,
for the most part,
There's so many things that I would want to say about how it gets interesting after that. But, you know, the people running around in the black costumes, we don't know who they are, but they turn out to be a middle-aged couple. Middle-aged to elderly.
Yeah.
I don't know, 60s?
Yeah, I was in their
60s.
Because their kids were obviously college age.
Yeah, their kids were college age. So they were late 50s, early 60s. I can't really think of another slasher film where that's the case. Well, I don't know. I mean, how old is Michael Myers at this point? I'm sure, yeah.
Ageless.
So I'll stop right there. But I just think it does really interesting things with the slasher from that point on. Prior to that point, it was just like, oh, the same masked killer, annoying young people. There's only three of them. How many kills are we going to have? Because there's only three people.
Mm-hmm.
Running around aimlessly and screaming. That part was all boring.
But you're right. The pacing was off, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the first 5 minutes were pretty good. I think it's, Tyler Murphy that they kill in the, the first 5 minutes.
In the opening
That was
sequence.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
At least, you know, there's some...
Yeah, that was good.
Ambivalence about where the killer is.
Yeah.
And then this fun chase scene. And you think that that's how it's going to be, these moments of that. And it really was about a lull of almost 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fascinating, because everything you just said kind of ties into one of the two reasons why I think people are not going to like this film, like myself. You referenced the person in the car who wants her to wear a mask. To me, it was like Scream 2, Laurie Metcalf all over again.
I
was like, it's Jane Addams. She's clearly involved in this. She's one of the killers. It gives it away. Like, it's too obvious of a casting. And it makes sense because, again, this is Kevin Williamson.
And they follow the rules,
co-writer,
just like Scream.
Follows it exactly. This is like a watered-down version of Scream. And it feels like Williamson went back to the same well that he pulled from for Scream. We don't get supremely interesting kills. In fact, this is really light on slashing for a slasher. So if you're going to do that, you have
to
do something that's interesting.
Only there's only two people who are killed. The guy in the beginning and then DJ.
By the slashers. There's a couple other death scenes, but you're right. When the intruder in the house, because remember there's three at first.
Their other son. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the guy that falls on the moose antlers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and then mom that runs off, she lurches forward like Jason Voorhees' mother, and then gets lit on fire and does that whole stroll off to the very, very end.
There's also the guy across the river, I think it is, who she goes to.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge question mark in my head, because given the killer's motivations, it makes absolutely no sense that they're killing innocent people as well. So I think there was...
But they answered that, too, because she was like, well, what about these people? They had nothing to do with it. And she was just like, well, it's your irresponsibility.
Yes, but he's the exception to that, because the other people had been participating in the partying.
And also breaking the quarantine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So...
But the person across the lake whom Parker runs to for help, I guess it's just wrong place, wrong time kill.
And normally I would buy that, especially like in a slasher, but this is so specific to a particular ideology of the killers that if you're going to deviate from that, there has to be some sort of explanation, especially when you're privileging innocent victims as a way of sort of getting revenge. It just didn't add up for me.
So we should probably explain who the killers are. So this makes a little bit more sense. That there actually are three killers, and I kind of forgot that. There's a mother, father, and their son. Yes. Just one son, right? Yeah. And their motivation is that Parker was at a party during COVID, breaking quarantine, posted a video about it on Instagram or some social media site with various sort of hashtag fuck COVID and, and other things like that.
COVID,
like,
on my face.
Yeah. 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 Like, we don't care about COVID. She was kissing a boy at the party, and the boy turned out to be the son and brother of the killers. And he dies from COVID, like, just before the events of the film. So they're taking revenge on Parker. Mm-hmm. So you're objecting to the fact that sort of innocent people get caught up in the crossfire because their motivation is so specific. But what about...
That's my small criticism of a bigger issue.
Even if the best friend wasn't at the party, they said, well, you should have been quarantining by yourself. So therein forth, it is your fault. But it still doesn't explain the guy across the lake.
Who was seemingly by himself.
Right. Yeah. He was following all of the rules.
Following the rules.
He was. But, I mean, I think that was actually you, Liz, in another life.
We're going to get into that. This life.
But, you know, that they're clearly... I mean, one of the things I liked about it was they do a lot with Friday the 13th. Yeah. I mean, you've already mentioned, I mean, they mentioned Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees gets a mention early on. The mother's name is Pamela. Mm-hmm. So Pamela Voorhees. And I'm sure in Friday the 13th, I'm sure some innocent people, I mean, she has a motivation. It's not ideological, but it's about revenge. And I like the way this film is sort of playing on
that. Yeah, the counselor's negligent.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it is. Yeah. You're so smart.
But it's but isn't it mostly people who are still affiliated with the camp in some way?
Yeah, and who are counselors, but they're completely innocent. So, you know,
But they're participating. This dude was just chilling.
Mind. That they're irrational. You know, they're killers.
But are they completely irrational? See, this is.
Liz is going to expose for your eyes only that she's a Karen. Are you? Because I have this theory that she's a Karen killer.
No. Oh, we're going to fight.
This is a classic boomer zoomer.
Oh, I could not disagree with you more. How is this a Karen?
Because
she's adhering to public health guidelines.
There's a difference. There's a difference between adhering to public health and being belligerent. So it's not...
Belligerent?
I mean, I would say she was belligerent if she broke into... Well, followed somebody, broke into their home, chloroformed them, and then... I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb. That's a little extra.
But that's just a little. Entirely the problem with this film, is how it positions taking a public health crisis seriously.
It does.
So in all seriousness, I think the reason that a lot of people are going to have difficulty with this film is depending on your positionality, right? How are you affected by the pandemic?
For the record, I'm pro public health. I am fully vaccinated.
I love that you have to say that, but it is true. Like, I can say, like, as somebody who lost somebody to COVID, you know, somebody who had a stroke as a result of COVID.
Yeah.
Registers in a different way. And that's not to say I can't find humor in it, because I did find, like, the beginning where you see the first guy and there's a cough and everyone looks and gives him the skunk eye. That was funny. And, you know, when he's wiping down all of the groceries, there are little moments during that.
I did that once. And then I was like, I can't keep doing this.
Most people were like, they're like, it's just too much. But the problem with this film is that it really does position people who take and took the pandemic seriously as sort of the outlier freaks.
Crazy killers.
Yes. And I mean, they even have the killers not wear your typical mask. They're wearing a medical mask. And it's almost like it's the height of privilege to say that the pandemic is over. If you're immunocompromised, I'm still wearing a mask at work. And this film absolutely denigrates that experience. And it's not even done cleverly. Like, if you could make that case and you can do it wisely or in a way that's like very funny or a way that's like moving into horror in a unique and new way, I'm down for that. It doesn't do it. It gives us derivative crap and then puts this type of messaging on it. I'm not here for it.
Hot garbage?
Hot garbage, baby.
Well,
hot garbage.
I have to say that maybe not everyone reads the movie like that. I mean, one of the things that I really wanted to say here is that I loathed Parker.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, one of the thoughts I had as the movie went along was I was really thinking like, okay, she's clearly going to be positioned as the final girl here. I'm like, what is that? Like, are we supposed to be sort of identifying with her, rooting for her, like
thinking
she's right? I mean, because you're right that, you know, the killers are obviously, they're positioned as the people who care about the rules when it comes to public health. And they're obviously like positioned as crazed killers, especially the, you know, Pamela, the mother. But I also think like Parker is sort of a parody, maybe a parody too, and we're not really supposed to identify with her. Like, the film is showing two extremes.
See, I don't think so. I think we are supposed to identify with her, especially where there's the one scene.
I started wondering actually at the end when she stumbles off into the sunrise with her friend. I'm like, whoa, are they really?
Oh, there's another issue there too.
Are they asking her to feel about her like we felt about Sydney when she survived Scream?
I think so.
I can't believe that they would be asking us to do that. She's just so unlikable on so many levels.
It almost felt like an apology for, I don't know if you remember, like when there was the stay-at-home orders and all of the quote-unquote influencers were like partying hard in California to the point where they had to say like, we are going to like shut you down and send you to jail.
I remember that.
So like the Kardashians
and
I don't know, like James Charles and people of that ilk. And it felt like very much like she was a representative of that, like because she's clearly very privileged like they are. You see the...
Well, her cabin.
Yeah, the cabin, which is like this spacious mansion. Yeah. So I think there was a little bit of an interplay with that. But there's that moment where after she's finally been caught by the two surviving killers, the husband and the wife, where they put the plastic bag over her head and said, like, how does it feel not to be able to breathe?
Yeah.
And it's done in such a way, like you can see her bruised and bloodied body. And now she's like slowly being tortured by not being able to breathe. It's natural that your empathy would go towards someone like that, especially because she is a teenager. In fairness, her brain has not finished developing. Yeah, I just thought the whole construction of that was just really not great.
I was more upset that killers of this age and era are still using plastic bags. Like, aren't we beyond plastic?
They are in New Jersey.
They are.
I tried to go to Target, man. They were like out.
Yeah, so if this film was set in Jersey or Delaware, it would have at least been something not plastic.
Well, I'm curious about, you both like seem to like the ending scene where the two leave.
Like, I wouldn't say I like it. No, I mean, I had a sort of what the heck kind of reaction to that.
Okay.
You know, just because the sun, I think the sun's coming up and, well, like it is at the beginning of, at the end of Scream, where sort of the sun's coming up and Gail Weathers is doing her report. I just, and maybe it's my age, I don't know. I like, just did not like Parker at all. And I was like, what the heck? Are they expecting us to be happy that she survived or like somehow be on her side in all of this? Like everything the killer said about her, I agreed with. But I don't think that necessarily means that I have to hate the film, if you know what I'm saying.
No, for sure.
So did you guys know who made the film before you watched it?
You mean Kevin Williamson?
Yeah. Do you think that influenced?
I knew that he had his like fingers in the pie. I didn't realize that he had co-written it with someone, but I don't know that that influenced me or not.
I'm just stuck on fingers in the pie. I don't think I've heard that expression before. It took me a little aback. There were gestures that went along with it too. You'll have to just believe me. But no,
they
I didn't
wish
know.
It was a video podcast.
I know. I'm just. I do have a.
Oh, look at you,
Camp Crystal Lake shirt on.
Oh,
so.
Awesome!
But no, I didn't know if that influenced your thought process on it. I mean,
I don't think it
read Scream through and through. But as far as the ending, I have zero allegiance to those two girls that are at the end.
Yeah. Even Miri?
I think she's gonna make a horrible doctor. Because isn't that what she's going to school for, to be a doctor?
She was sort of a non-entity. I just didn't really.
I'm thinking
care
to myself, like. Yeah. You saran wrapped a stick to your leg, but you couldn't make a friggin' crutch with that? I don't think it's going to support, but I mean, she was so smart in so many other ways. Just maybe not going into medical school. But the only thing I liked about it is because it did kind of evoke this happily ever after ending. And in my head, I like when an ending is two best friends.
Okay.
So forget, you know, the narrative along the way.
Right.
I like two best friends, especially when it's two female best friends. And it didn't have to be a final girl. I mean, I guess she kind of is. But she wouldn't have lived had her friend not be there, because she was still, her friend is the one that killed
son.
So it's kind of a team effort.
But what kind of friendship is that? Because Miri lets us know that she lives with her father. So she's constantly saying, like, why aren't you wearing a mask?
Put your mask on.
You tested, right? And her quote-unquote best friend is like, oh, I tested. It's fine.
She clearly didn't.
And she, like, what kind of friendship is it if you know that someone is in a vulnerable state and you just don't give a damn?
Well, and if you wouldn't share a joint with your best friend, I mean, it's not a true friendship.
I mean, you know
they
I believe that.
They wouldn't share the same joint. So, I mean, certain things transcend.
But that was my problem with them walking. I was like, where's that conversation? Where's Miri be like, what the hell?
Parker's very narcissistic and egocentric.
But I thought it was a Karen for not liking her.
I don't care for her, but I do feel that the over-representation of the killers is what makes them a Karen, because that is a trend now, too. And it really positions them as this, you know, on social media, too, they'll be like, boomers, zoomers, you know, and it is a classic clash of boomers and zoomers. I mean, she's going in on, you know, putting her down for her generation. I have it written down somewhere, too, about these generational digs that she has.
Yeah, she does. I wrote some of that down, too. Pamela says, so selfish, your generation. I mean, and I agreed with them.
Me too.
I mean, it's interesting because in Scream, there's the same, I mean, that generational gap happens in Scream. And there's the same moment, I think, when the police chief, you know, Dewey's boss says, oh, and Henry Winkler is the principal. Also, he's like, you know, you thieving, whoring generation. I mean, he's just like, he lays into them. So the older people are just, and, you know, it's true of, like in Scream, when all those kids go rushing off to see Henry Winkler's body hanging from the football post, like, we hate them. We, you know, that's bad.
Yeah.
But there are young people, thank God, in that movie. I mean, maybe just Sydney in the end, that we can like.
Yeah.
So I thought this film did an interesting job of, like, I thought making us more sympathetic with the older generation and none for the younger. Now, I don't know if that was their intention. I need to find young people who've watched this movie to see what they think of Parker.
I mean, I also think, while I won't demonize the woman for being a Karen, I think what it did is it played into the whole concept that we've talked about before that isn't horror essentially conservative. So it's like this woman could have potentially represented this overbearing government, intrusion into your life, telling you how to live your life, you know, policing your actions. So it's kind of this bigger version of that generation. And then same thing, too, with Parker's generation. Yeah. None of this would have even been found out if she wasn't stupid enough to post
it on social media. Yeah.
So then they were able to use her own tools against her because they followed her on social media, found all of this stuff. So I guess I liked the generational play.
Yeah.
And I didn't get mad about the Karens because I guess I've started to just believe that I have not found a liberal horror film in a long time that actually stays.
Right. Well, I would say that's two things to that. Like, the first is that Karens tend to be irrational and privileged. I don't think the killers in this case occupy either of those spaces. I don't think they're being irrational, and I don't think they're coming from a place of privilege. Quite the opposite.
They are killing people?
I mean, no, I'm not defending their actions, but what I'm defending is... Okay, now
to the
I'm
point of whether they're irrational or not.
Now I'm killing. Going to do the Gwen PSA. I don't believe in stalking and murdering people. Having said that, I do understand.
Unless they deserve it.
I do understand the rage and the anger that in the worst case scenario could be turned outward and result in more tragedy.
From my stabbing people.
So y'all haven't been stabbed yet, have you?
That's because we're social distancing in here.
That's right. We are social distancing.
And we all have toilet paper at home.
But more to your point about that being a conservative reading, and that is totally valid, the idea of like big government, you know, coming in intrusive. It's also a liberal philosophy of the public good has to outweigh your rugged individualism. So, okay, we may have found the one strain that I find semi-interesting about this film, is that it really is
occupying. We knew we'd get you there.
I still think it's hot garbage, but yes, that is interesting that it's occupying both of those political spheres simultaneously.
So conservative in the sense of intrusive, what you were saying about in the intrusiveness of the middle-aged couple who represent sort of, that's not really conservative.
Even though the president was a conservative, you know, Republican president at the time, yeah. I think that a lot of times people viewed the intrusion as representative of more liberal politicians.
Yeah.
And or liberal thinkings.
That's how it's been positioned politically through the pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, it's not saying that's what we think. I know plenty of Republicans that wear masks and they're fine. You know what I mean? It's not that. And I think that this overbearingness of you need to protect everybody sentiment was often aligned in popular culture with more liberal.
Yeah.
And then I think that aligned more in social media might be this conservative mindset that you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
My rugged individualism. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not the boss of me, kind of.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of gets to the killer's motivation, too, because it's almost like Parker and her crew are saying you're vulnerable and you're disposable. And they're answering by saying, no, you're disposable. And one's a more violent way to harm someone.
One's a more passive way.
Mm-hmm.
God, it was just another reason I didn't like Parker. Because at the very end, like, as this woman is just pouring her guts about losing her son, Parker's like, I said I was sorry.
Yes. Yes.
I just wanted
and
to
that was the moment.
You she nailed it. I wrote that down.
But she is
a kid.
She
said, I was sorry.
She is a kid.
She is a kid.
A millennial kid. I mean,
I'm sorry,
or a Zoomer.
She's not 10.
No, she's not 10, but
to understand the implications of what. Well, even at the party, like lots of kids had parties during COVID, and you know, she didn't understand. She didn't foresee all the possible rippling consequences that could come of that. Exactly, like that takes abstract thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But her response when the mother is standing right there telling her, like, this is what happened, you know, you were COVID positive. And I love the moment where the mother, like, sticks the swab up Parker's nose to do the forcible COVID test. I was like, I can't believe they're doing that.
Which, BT dubs, they were no instant COVID tests at the beginning of the pandemic when this movie takes place.
She only does one nostril, and I've taken enough tests to know you must do two. Both.
But that's a problem when people have just lived through it and you're making these little mistakes. It's like, well.
Well, I have another point to make about that. But just to like, so yeah, Parker was COVID, was positive, which means she lied to Mary. And then the mother is standing right there saying, like, you did kill my son. And the film doesn't question that.
No.
Like, there's no sort of like, you know, well, maybe it wasn't Parker. There's nothing that allows us to think that. Like, we think the parents are right. Okay, you did do it. And yet she still says, I said I was sorry. Like, that's an adequate response.
And where was his mask?
Yeah, she does say that.
And then she says, well, like, he wasn't wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Deny and defending.
I mean, that's true, though. Like, you can forgive her poor impulse control as a college student. But it's when she's sitting there and she's making deliberate decisions in the face of somebody's pain and loss.
Yeah.
That you just, at least I was like, well, I can't have empathy for this character because she genuinely does not give a damn.
Yeah.
Which she kind of showed by not caring about her friend.
So here's an abstract thought. So I was trying to think about, like, who is the villain then? Like, who is the villain? Because depending on what your positioning is, you can really see Parker as a bit of a villain because she kind of set this ball rolling. Well, no, technically, I guess Tyler Murphy did, but we took care of him.
Yeah.
And then you could see the parents as villains. But what if you see the pandemic and the whole entire thing. Because this is one of the first films that treated the pandemic in horror as something besides just a contagion.
Right, right.
Like they, absolutely.
Because everything
That's
else was
I
like
about it.
Monkeypox. Everything else was just like spreadable diseases. And they just turned into zombies and all that weird stuff. But this was one of the first ones that actually used it as a setting and, I think, arguably a main character.
Yes.
So the true killer that set all of this into action would be COVID.
But I think you're giving the film way too much credit in terms of, I agree with you that it does work as like a separate character almost.
Yeah.
But the film is very much a straight slasher. And we have our final survivors. And in a straight slasher, the survivors are the ones you're supposed to root for.
Yeah.
And there's never really any sort of troubling of that ending. Like, you are given the walking into out into the sunset together. Yeah. That elicits a classic response in slasher films. So it's I don't think this film is interested in complicating
it. I was 100% reading against the grain then, because I did not like her from beginning to end.
And I mean,
and honestly, that's what I thought was interesting about the film. And other films have done it, mostly Unfriended. I mean, I loathed the main character in that film. And so I could sort of see Sick as like inheriting that tradition where, you know, and it's an irony, like slashers are made for young people. But if you're making a slasher for a young audience and sort of underhandedly like criticizing them and everything they stand for and do, I mean, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, none of the characters were really likable. However, I'm sitting here thinking about like horror and slasher kind of rules. And at least if you go with the traditional reading that the parents are the killers, arguably, they are sympathetic.
They are. And I was trying to think where I mean, Pamela Voorhees, I mean, and they do reference Friday the 13th more so than Scream.
Yeah.
Like I mean, I guess that I can see ways in which it's like Scream. But I thought it was more like Friday the 13th. And that's always, that's always been a slasher where the killer of the first one has been set apart as having a somewhat justified motive, you know, as the mother of a kid who was killed.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's definitely that sympathy, but she's still the killer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She's still the one you're
and
not supposed to align with.
And she's still set on fire at the end in a way. Like, are we supposed
it's vicious.
To cheer at that part, at that point?
I think so. I think it's supposed to be like a cathartic ending.
Yeah. It was a little hokey.
I mean. What I thought was interesting, and one reason I would want to, well, I'm never going to rewatch this, but it potentially, if I was going to, I would want to watch it with someone younger.
Yeah.
Because the whole issue of the social media with regard to the first guy who's killed and then also with them. So they get to the lake and they start to get these text messages of like, jump in the water or like nice bathing suit. Well, clearly the person can see them. They are completely nonplussed about the whole thing. They're like, block.
Yeah.
I love how they think blocking them is going to stop them from being stalked.
But
like, the person can see you.
But that's the whole thing. It's like their reaction to being stalked in a mediated environment was to just sort of be like, well, whatevs. And I'm like, I would have been freaked the hell out. And I wonder if that's not a symptom of age.
Absolutely.
And like surveillance culture and what people are used to. So...
Well, and also, like, it's pushing people into, unreality.
Yeah.
I mean, Black Christmas did that, because I actually wrote that down as one of my notes. It's like, you know, in slashers, we used to get the point of view shots of the killer. In fact, in Friday the 13th, there's a point of view shot looking down on the counselors swimming by the lake in a scene that's kind of like the one where Parker and Mary are by the lake. Mm-hmm. But we don't have the point of view shots from the slasher killer's perspective anymore. It's all about texting. And in Black Christmas, when that happens, like the characters look around and they're like, where is this person? And the guy does at the beginning of Sick. But yeah, those girls seem to be sort of in some unreal realm where if it's not existing on social media, it's not actually happening.
It just really struck me that like the rules of dread building now might have a generational divide.
Yeah.
Because in a film like that would work to make me concerned. Whereas I think for younger people, that wouldn't work as a dread building. So what happens when there is such a specific generational divide between horror fans trying to watch the same movie?
Again, probably trying to give way too much credit, but there is a bit of a parallel to the sickness or the virus of the social media with the pandemic, too.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like they've been so inoculated to this kind of culture that it did elicit that type of response, which then made them vulnerable to being killed.
Definitely.
So you have these kind of dueling stories, which, again, I'm pretty sure they didn't think about.
1,000%, but that's why we're here.
I'll give you that one.
We'll think so you don't have to.
Exactly. Right. Horror film directors, call us. We will make your movie smart.
You know, it was thinking about it in terms of slashers. I mean, it was kind of cool to use COVID as the new form of transgression.
Yeah.
You know, it was always sex as the thing young people did that got them killed. And this film sort of takes flouting quarantine and masking rules as the form of transgression.
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out myself, too. Like, when they were being hunted down, I'm like, well, did they really transgress? Like, no, other than that.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I kept writing here, and I'm really interested now in studying audience reactions to this. But, you know, like when some man dies, I guess it must have been the father, when he's killed, I wrote down, Parker looks down with satisfaction as the man dies.
Oh, right, yeah, the moose antlers, because she was above a higher level.
She was above. And then I put in parentheses, are we supposed to feel happy for her here?
I think so.
I wasn't.
I think we're supposed to, like, live vicariously. Like, if I was under this threat, this is how I would want to respond. And I think that she's the typical final girl.
Just a bad version. That's the one thing. I enjoyed the movie. I just didn't like the characters that much. I wasn't in love with anybody. I don't think there's anybody I was like, holy hell, they were fun.
I think this movie really challenges slasher conventions precisely by giving us a final girl who we hate. But that wouldn't work, obviously, if lots of people watch this film and are rooting for Parker.
Yeah.
So we got to find, I've got to see if that's true.
In your free time, you can research audience reaction. Oh, my gosh. I think you're right, though. Like, how you read Parker really is going to impact how you read the film overall.
How you feel about this film.
Yeah. Although it's interesting that I don't hate Parker as much as I think you two.
Yeah, I can't stand her.
Hate Parker.
There's nothing to like about her. Maybe this is purposeful on the filmmaker's part. Like, usually the final girl has some sort of trauma, or there's some reason, like, we're drawn into her character for some reason so we can identify her with her. We don't identify with her just because she's the survivor. We don't know that yet. I mean, Parker is a non-entity. She has no, I mean, what does she have any redeeming qualities?
But for
does she
a
do
younger...
anything to make anyone like her?
Mm-mm.
I wonder, though, for like a younger audience member, though, if there wouldn't be that identification of, I know exactly how it felt. Like, I didn't want to be in quarantine either. It's so ridiculous. It's so overblown.
It does set the stage to be kind of like completely exhausted with COVID. Because you hear, I mean, it starts out with, like, you know, the overhead talking about social distancing. And he's looking for toilet paper. And that evokes that part in you that's like, ugh, right?
And
so I guess you're right. It does kind of set her up to be the cool kid. But
and I just think, like, if you're going to do a film like this on COVID, I don't know. It's kind of presupposing that the pandemic's over. And I guess my point is it's not for a lot of people. And it's not for the people who are being marginalized by the film. And its argument that, you know, the killers are overblown, this whole thing with the mask. Because I cannot get past the fact that the killers literally wear a medical mask. What the hell? Like, who looked at that and was like, oh, that's clever?
I guess I don't understand your objection to that, though. I did have an issue with the masks. Like, this was April 2020.
Yeah.
That was a time when the pandemic started, right, when we were told not to wear masks. I thought there was a point where people were like, because they were trying, as it turned out later, like, there weren't any masks.
Oh,
so they were
trying
to stop people from rushing out and hoarding them.
Yeah, but its timeline is weird.
Or we didn't have them yet because everybody was sewing them at that point.
That's right.
Oh, I remember the sewing
with the cute
of the mask.
With the cute.
I was guilty of that.
Was that a Harry Potter one?
Is that April? I can't remember. Because, like, literally.
It's pretty early on. Yeah.
I feel like at first you were sort of told, no, you don't need masks. But when they finally said you did need masks, it's like you couldn't find them anywhere.
Yeah.
So.
It just seems like a very
There were a lot of masks
early...
for April 2020.
Yeah.
I also am curious if the audience for horror is changing now that all of these streaming services have a lot of movies that go much quicker to your living room.
That's a great question.
And if not right to your living room, because it might, I wonder what his intended audience was. Because I know historically it used to be like teen to young 20s men, and then it started to kind of shift a little bit. But I wonder, because this doesn't seem like Parker would be a completely endearing character for even the old kind of horror audience.
But he didn't write this by himself. He has a co-writer, Caitlin Crabb, who I don't know anything about.
Yeah,
so I'm curious.
Caitlin, call us.
Her background.
We'd love to hear from you.
Call Gwen.
Yeah, please do.
You want to give the phone number?
Yeah, I'm sure it's on every bathroom wall. You'll find it.
Just the tri-state area.
Maybe Mid-Atlantic. I mean,
this
I'm bi-coastal.
I can't with you.
This film did drop without a sound.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
did. I hadn't even heard of it till you texted us about
it. No, it's totally your fault, Gwen.
I am obsessed with Peacock.
I do love Peacock. They have all the old WWF wrestling too. BT Dubs.
I may or may not have indulged in that. I feel like I have to purge that out of me, but And we did recently watch the Royal Rumble. I'm sorry.
Macho Man Savage for life. No, but your point is a good one. Like, has viewer habits changed so much?
Since the pandemic, really?
Yeah, within the last two or three years. How does that impact?
Because a lot of the good horror.
Are reading, yeah.
If it goes to the movie theaters, it's not there long, and then it's right on your streaming services, because most of us have them.
And it complicates it, too, because you don't have any idea if how you're reading it is the way other people, because you don't have that audience reaction of, are people cheering when she's set on fire?
Exactly.
Or are they just like, that's horrible? Like, you just really have your own frame of reference.
Yeah, because then you have the big box films that actually come to the movie theater, like Pearl, and they're horrible.
Okay, so I guess we're probably afraid to recommend this because Liz would stab us with her pen.
She doesn't condone stabbing.
Yeah, that's true. She did say she doesn't condone stalking and killing.
No. I like that I have to be on record for that. No, I mean, it is, I guess, something worth talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just won't watch it again.
Yeah.
But well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. So that's what matters.
I enjoyed it after 1 hour and 40 seconds. 40 seconds. And I enjoyed it because I do, just to recap, I do think it is doing interesting things with the slasher that haven't been done before, honestly, with a more thoroughly unlikable final girl than... even in Unfriended, and I really did not like the final girl in Unfriended. and also with its representation of sort of the middle-aged killers with the motive, I thought it was interesting.
I agree. I think that it had some good things to do with the slasher genre, and I also liked that they had a movie about Corona that wasn't a zombie movie or
just
actual infection of other people. That got old. So I thought it was just a little different.
And I could not get past the fact that they position people who actually care about public health as insane.
I like how
murderers.
She's positioning us against.
We all see different things. That's why I said it's your positionality. It's really what your experience was, I think. I stand by it. Hot garbage, guys. Hot garbage. So if you agree with me, and I hope there is at least one person out there who agrees with me, please
then send
let
us pictures
know.
Of hot garbage.
Hot garbage, baby. That's what I'm putting on Instagram.
Yes, there you go.
I do hope that you teach it, though, to undergrads, because I'm genuinely curious what their reaction are. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for us when it comes to Sick. If you want to chat with us about this film, you can find us on all things social media at Horror Homeroom. Does anyone have personal stuff they want to shout out?
I do not.
No.
I mean, my waist size has gotten larger. I feel like I could share.
I don't know. I hear people say, like, I'm here on social media. I mean... I don't know. None of us really. Anywho, okay. Well, we will be back to talk about X or no, Pearl
or Megan.
Or Megan.
So that's
something.
Good.
But we will do more than two podcasts this year.
Okay.
That's all we did last year. Was
oh, wow. Definitely.
So, yes.
Blame it on public health mandates.
That's right. Okay. We'll talk to you guys later.
Right, bye.